Blog Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
evening. Show number 1,300 and something. I gotta go back and check. Anyway, good evening and welcome to another edition of Soul Stadium in the Raw. Ow! I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Honeycomb, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Soul Tree Ready with the Raw, proudly sponsored at BASNNewsroom.com and the Access of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Need all the good shit. Who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now, at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network, wherever they may be, Radio Reggie in Richmond, Virginia, D. Orlando Ledbetter and Cheryl Jones in Philadelphia, and a special shout-out and congratulations to D. Orlando Ledbetter's daughter, Danielle, who is part now of the morning crew at Fox 54 in Augusta, GA. Congratulations, darling. She'll be on from 5 to 9, so everybody, you get to wake up every now and then. If you're not in the area, keep your eyeballs open for Danielle. Of course, Pat Freeman, the Mighty O-Bomb, running up the charts as his book, The Art of the Interview, is doing quite well. We'll hear from O-Bomb soon as the Rochester Charge is ready for the 2021 MFL season. And, of course, all the rest of the brethren and sistren who will be calling in every now and then. Special shout-out again to our sister, little Rhonda, who is doing damage. Rhonda, we love you. We always knew you got it in you, so just keep on grinding, darling. And you know the hot tub posse is behind you 1,000%. With us, as always, my main man, my brother, bad man from the East Bay, guy we know as Greg. What up, G?
We shall overcome. It may not be tomorrow. It may not be this week. What's
happening? I feel you. What's causing
Michael,
all this?
Michael, we're at a turning point.
Yeah.
And this turning point is very difficult. See, when you go through changes, when you go through political, social, economic changes, it is painful.
Yeah.
But before we do that, we gotta do this.
That's true. Go ahead, baby.
For almost two decades, the Black Athlete Sports Network has served as the definitive source for information about the black athlete. Whether it be historical or analytical, BASN has always celebrated the contributions of sports' most innovative and unique being, the black athlete. In 2016, as we relaunch blackathlete.com, look for more of the same from our unique set of writers and historians. We have been and always will be the soul of sports. We are BASN.
We are BASN.
Yes, we are.
Now, let me continue on the little diatribe here.
Please.
Last week, or two weeks ago, a young man decided to walk into a massage parlor. You. Asian-American. 1 week later, an Arab American goes to a store and shoots white people. Now, I want the gold carrier and open door to do the homework.
Yeah.
I want you all to check which they has gun laws and which they don't. Which they has gun crime and which they don't.
Okay.
You will be surprised what you find.
I don't know.
Why I say it is because we have a Democratic president right now.
What?
Democrats usually roll with gun control. Republicans don't. If they do not get a gun control bill passed in the next 4 years, it will never get done.
You're right.
Never. There's no reason, ladies and gentlemen, for anybody to have AK-47 or AR-15. No reason at all.
I agree. But you got to remember something, G. There's a loaded deck situation that folks are playing with here. See, I think while the NRA took some hits for a lot of this shit that's happened lately, they still have their arrangement with the gun manufacturers. So they've been on the quiet. The gun people are still buying guns. They didn't stop buying guns because of the crazy shit that's happening out here. And for every person who might legitimately buy a gun for anything from home defense to hunting or whatever, you got four or five motherfuckers buying guns illegally or buying them as part of straw purchases and stuff, and they don't care. All they want to know is that they got a Roscoe because they need that backup. I ain't going to be mad at them about that, but let's be real. Dylan Roof and this person that shot up the supermarket, they are kith and kin. That's the same person, because these are the same stupid SOBs who try to justify their actions by saying, you know, well, we had a bad day. Now, when I heard that, I was enraged. How can you have a bad day by killing only 8 people? Think about that.
Michael, wait. If that person were black or brown, would not be allowed to have another day to live.
We know. That's right. There would be no McDonald's or Happy Meal or whatever the fuck it is. Yes.
Until America comes to its knees.
Yep.
And deal with reality, right? What Dylan Roof did was domestic terrorism.
Yeah.
You have yet to hear anybody say Dylan Roof is a terrorist.
That's right. And you're not going to hear it, G.
Ever.
No, you're not going to hear it. As a matter of fact, we said this years ago, but it's got to be, it's apropos for what you're talking about right now. Whoever that woman was, God bless her, who followed that little shit's ass for 40 minutes so that they could pinpoint and track him and then eventually arrest him, she deserves a medal. She deserves, and I don't want to, I can deal with the QT recognition because her life might be in jeopardy for what she did. I truly believe that Dylan Roof, and I know conspiracy theories are running wild right now, but this one we think has some tangibility to it. Dylan Roof was part of a group of these motherfuckers who were going to do this. You can call them Manchurian candidates, whatever you want it. They were programmed to do things and take people out. And every time they did something, create so much of a stir that people weren't paying attention to them. And so it would go in another direction. So something else dastardly could be done.
Okay,
and that's
okay.
The big problem.
Now, think about this.
Mm.
Those
at the beginning, my sound levels
are fluctuating. A week ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a brewing undercurrent of Asian black conversation.
Right.
Why? Because this is where I want to kick somebody in the butt. The Asian black thing is very small, very minute. But if you look at the media, it's the biggest thing you've seen in centuries. It's not. For every black Asian conversation,
You're not going to hear from the media. As a matter of fact, whatever time the media has been on it. Whatever time the media has been on it. Yes.
1996, when Rodney King got beat up, the Korean Americans, the Black Americans were toe-to-toe. They went toe-to-toe. The Black Church and the Korean Church said, whoa, 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 whoa. Where? What are you doing?
Yeah.
And once the Black Church and the Korean Church had meetings, that shit stopped.
It's past that now, though, G. And it's because they've been whipping this up into a fever. You know, Black people and whatever it was that's happened has been magnified to such a degree because it was deliberately stirred up. You know,
yes.
I know there was an incident or so with Black folks and Asians, but
yes.
The majority of these involve white people. And you also
Michael, how can you be 3-1
not paying
attention? Come on.
Well, look, you had agitators also like Bill Maher who used this show as a bully pulpit to create the Black boogeyman live and in living color, and he didn't even flinch about it. He knew exactly what he was doing. There are people in this, there are race soldiers, whatever you want to call them, whose agendas don't have anything to do with wanting to redress any balance. They want to make sure that some shit is starting so that some other big dastardly shit can be done beneath it. You know, all of a sudden now, everybody's concerned about Asians' rights. Asian Americans, no beef with them. We want them to have the same rights as everybody else. Everybody has the same rights.
Yeah.
We know Black Americans get treated differently.
They know.
So that's not even
I have four Asian goddaughters.
Mm-hmm.
Four.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you something. This America did not want unity among Latino, Black, and Asian. They didn't want any kind of unity. That's where if we were smart, we would say, hey, enough of the BS.
Look,
let's join forces and run these guys out of town.
Yeah, but see, Gary, that's not happening. Cause
I know.
Creating discord is big business. And we got Radio Reggie here on the back end of this. To remind everybody that, look, we know Black people get treated differently. We know Black people are viewed differently. All of that, those are givens, you know? So now, with this new accent coming into the picture, everybody else is going to see what they can get out of it before they move on, and Black people will still be left where they were. So whatever blip this Asian thing is, nobody wants to mention that. Everything else that happens to Black people is anti-Black. You know, you just finished picking a trial for a man who was a victim of anti-Black terror and racism. Got choked the fuck out for a fake $20 bill. I mean, can somebody here help me?
Help
well,
me, brother. You know it's you. Come on, man. Come on.
What they did in L.A., mm-hmm. They got a jury, and then we're going to move the drive from L.A. to Simi Valley.
What happened?
They all got off. Until the judicial the justice is truly served, which I doubt, but when justice is truly served,
you know, Gary,
America will be a better place. And then what? The reason why I tell people this, why do we have police in this country today? We have police in this country because in 1860, they were created to capture runaway slaves.
Well,
you know that.
Was citizens,
but
Gary,
you know, Mike, in all due respect.
Okay, Reggie.
You know, I apologize, guys, but in all due respect, Gary, don't take offense to what I'm going to say, but when you got young black folks, millennials say, I shouldn't vote, and they got over 400 fucking laws out there in different states where Republicans have took gerrymandering, and they're trying to shove voting suppression down.
Yeah.
And again,
of
Gary,
course.
I love you. Hold on, let me finish. Let me finish. But my thing is, yes, take the blinders off and yes, deal with reality. This two-party system has not helped us as black folks.
It doesn't work.
You know,
it doesn't work.
You know, if you look at South Africa, they have multiple systems where you have to come together and get three or four people in the majority. And the sad thing about it is that both parties, Democrats and Republicans, when you got somebody like Joe Manchin, a fucking Dixiecrat that's already saying if the Republicans don't work with the Democrats, I'm going on the Republican side. Now, for years, Democrats have been acting west and playing checkers. Republicans down the road have been playing chess. I'm not trying to be too long-winded, but guys, look at something. As soon as fucking President Obama was elected, what did they do? They weakened the Voters' Rights Act under Eric Holder. That's number one, Shelby versus Holder. And then number two, as soon as the fucking election was over with Joe Biden, they was already plotting to go ahead and overturn Georgia and the states they lost, and they really went after Wisconsin with new voting laws. And what the fuck are Democrats doing? Well, you know, it's Joe Biden.
Hold on,
I'm just saying this real quick, and I'll let you go. My thing is, you got fucking Joe Biden on CBS makes a comment. I think the Republicans going to have an epiphany, and they're going to work with us. Are you fucking kidding me? Come on, you're still reality.
Okay. Number one, the word conservative. Look up the word conservative. What does conservative mean?
Gary, I'm not worried about the word conservative. I'm talking about you got a lot of Democrats that don't want fucking change either. And I'm not a damn Republican. I'm not saying that to you, Gary. I apologize for using the word, but I'm just saying is that even under President Obama, he had a fucking royal flush of Boston hand and played board. He had both House and the damn House and Senate. And what'd he do? Mm-hmm. He fucked it all up. And people don't want to hear that. You know,
that's
real talk. That's what I'm saying, man. Stop with the damn pipe dreams. The young folks out there saying, I ain't got to vote. And then they turn around the voting acts, which could help their asses when it comes to picking a jury system or attorney generals or some people on some police department to move forward. You know, they've done a hell of a job of brainwashing the young folks. Whether we like it or not, you got to give Republicans credit. They know how to tell the story, and fucking Democrats don't.
Okay.
Stick with it.
Let's go to the real deal here. In first grade, and I told everybody this the other day, in first grade, what are you taught? You are taught
It depends on what school you went to.
What is the American way? The lie, cheat, and steal. That's what you're taught.
I didn't need to go to school.
In first grade, the lie, cheat, and steal.
You learn that in the neighborhood. You learn that on the street.
Because when you're older.
You know, that's surviving, you know. Even somebody steal your lunch. You figure, hiding in my socks so they don't know I got nothing. You figure somebody,
you
know
what?
You take my supplies,
guys,
hide it so they don't know where it is.
Forgive me, Reggie. Y'all need to understand, Reggie is on the right track here because this is a continuation from Obama. And I don't give a fuck how good his family looked in a picture. He really didn't do anything for us, you know.
He hurt the black community with the credit reform. That really hurt the black folks. But they won't talk about that.
He created Citizens United so that money got in the way of politics because they could donate whatever they wanted to depending on what it was, and nobody could stop it. So Gary was running for dog catcher, and he got millions of dollars in advertising. very likely Gary is going to win, and then they're going to say, okay, here's the payoff, G. But to continue where he's going, Biden has a Rubicon to cross him because now he got his money, and now he's trying to use this reconciliation, which you probably have to, for this infrastructure deal. Previous administration, before Trump, they put infrastructure bills on Congress's table 17
yes.
times.
Yes.
17 fucking times. And we estimated yep. that when Congress does business, they spend about $1.5 million of our taxpayer cash. So that's how much bullshit money they wasted to fuck around with this. And now, on top of all of this, they're going to try to squeeze this through again, although McConnell and the rest of these motherfuckers will choke it. They know what's going on. But listen, McConnell said the best thing he ever did was stopping Obama. He didn't hesitate to say that shit. Nobody in the news took him to task. And if they did, he would have just said, oh, you know, that's just politics. Well, this is just politics, too. It just happens that Asians have been thrown into the mix now. And somehow we have to make sure that folks get G-checked because you're not going to be blaming black people for this shit. You know, that's
well,
a direction they want to go. But you're not going to be blaming black people for this shit. We ain't nothing to do with this
black,
shit.
This black Asian thing is very dangerous. I'm being serious here. Because the Asian community is very strong. Now, if they go to the west side, we got a problem. We got to educate them too. We got bigger problems
than that. If it's about education, then they need to see the other end of this. Hey, y'all got treated just like black folks for a while, didn't you?
That's right.
So now you understand a little bit better. So if you're really paying attention, you're understanding a little bit better. Don't make the brothers and sisters boogeymen for this bullshit. These low fong motherfuckers are what you got to deal with. And that's white men. Those are the ones you got to deal with this. You know, as far as I'm concerned, like I said, my vibe's like Ali. No Viet Cong ever called me nigga. I don't know of any black man or woman who has said Chinese virus or Kung Fu. So your beef is elsewhere. And people better tell the story that it is supposed to go elsewhere. Because if it doesn't, it's our job to make sure that narrative gets replaced with the reality that that problem is elsewhere. Yeah, man, they're not going to stop with this. Reggie's bang on this case. The fact that Biden is going to do the same amount of ass kissing that he did before, but the only difference is this must be results-based. He must tell everybody straight up, look, brothers ain't got nothing to do with this shit. You know, these long-fong motherfuckers are the deal. They're the real boogeymen that you got to deal with now. And if you don't deal with them, it's going to be a problem. Now, Biden's not going to say the black folks aren't responsible for this because he's playing both sides against it. All he wants to do is make sure these checks go out. And, you know, if every now and then they get some good news regarding the vaccines, they're cool with that. The brothers are invisible because now – Evanston, Illinois, started a reparations program that's tied to housing. And, of course, they don't want to hear that R word, and I don't mean Republicans, because as far as I'm concerned, you can cut the fucking check right now. So we know there's more coming down the pike. The problem is the media doesn't care. Once this thing continues on and Asians get more visibility, for better or worse,
the media does care. What they're doing happening in the Bay Area here. You have Asian TV anchors who marry white guys. And they are conservative. So anytime an African American attacks black Asian American actor made it be news. That, I tell you who they are. Juju Jang, L.A.
And they've been stirring up trouble trying to imply that black people are part of the problem here. So
I know
they've been doing big dastardly shit. You know, just don't think that being pernicious and conniving and all that shit, you know, those are qualities that are unbereft in Asians. Of course they've been involved with that, manipulating the media. The media is there to be manipulated. That's the problem. And
anytime
the slant goes, the last people who are able to make hay with it are black people. So we have to constantly stay on top of this. For every Asian anchor that would start some shit with this, you know, you got one person, I think it was Representative Chu in California, who said the right thing. You know, we're getting help from the black community. We're getting help from other communities to bring this awareness out. Well, that's the truth. But all this other shit don't make the 6 o'clock news. All this other shit is about Bill Maher trying to start some shit with one of his hosts and talk up shit between Asians and black people. These motherfuckers know exactly what they're doing. And we can't have it. Motherfuckers gotta be in their face and say, no, you're getting G-checked on this. You're not gonna come out here and just say any old shit. You got the professor in the mix as well.
Well, what gets me mad about it is this. Juju Jang and Dion Lim are well known in the Asian community.
Yeah.
And what Juju Jang and Dion Lim says is almost gospel.
Sure.
And I have a problem with that.
Welcome to the real world. Hey, but Mike, real quick, not change subject, but I know Professor's in, and Professor gets points for being not only Negro dominant, but he said that when a certain coach would come down the pike and hadn't even played the big boys yet, he would get a rowdy check. How you doing that,
yes,
Professor?
How I get over? See, this is why I come on late. Y'all need to get this stuff out of the way before I get on here. this is just some more of that divide and conquer stuff because...
Yeah. What is it? Divide and conquer, exactly.
The last year, around this time, we were getting into the pandemic. And after the George Floyd incident, and the young lady got killed, and another young man got killed. And as a person who by nature is now a statistician, and the first thing you look for is stats, okay, what really happened? Okay, so my question was, what really happened? Where were the Orientals of any race? Because I'm not going to get into how stupid some white people are who go out and who are, quote, going out and attacking, quote, Chinese, not realizing these are Koreans.
Koreans, Japanese, yes.
You know, or even
yes.
worse, these are Hawaiians who have been in Hawaii for generations.
Yes.
Now, I would tell you that for the most part, yes. the people you see who are attacked are probably one of those ethnic groups. Because if you've ever seen a Samoan, Palomalo is a little one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I mean, a little fast, a little strong one. But, I mean, here at Fort Bragg, Samoans, they're the ones who carry the big guns out when they jump out of airplanes because they're big. You don't see nobody walking up with them, men or women, young or old. Because they look like they'll mess you up. But having said
St. Paul's had three of them down on the football team, and they got to fighting, and, Lord, they cleared the ring. And I do mean they cleared the field years ago.
Remember a few years ago we had one on our football team at Winston-Salem State?
Yes, sir.
Very few yards that, you know, you couldn't run the A-gap because that's where he was. And usually he was in the A-gap so fast and so big and strong that the center and the guard missed him or only got a piece of him. But, you know, this whole thing goes back to a level of ignorance that, I mean, and to show you how this jerk we have here is a lieutenant governor, or there's no such thing as systemic racism, because if that was the case, how you got two black people running for lieutenant governor?
Hello.
It was easy. You ran for it, nobody else would. She ran for it as a Democrat, nobody else wanted. And the guy who had been a lieutenant governor all before, he's been out of office, 2 months? We don't remember him. The only thing we remember about him is that plaid shirt he used to wear. But see, this is how systemic this was. Did you notice how fast it was the police chief, excuse me, in Atlanta, or whoever the guy was in Atlanta, he had a bad day.
Yes.
Okay. If he had a bad day, what was them people he shot? What kind of day they had?
Yeah, they had a really bad fucking day. But I digress. Yeah. And that's the bigger issue here. You know, that somebody would minimize the damage that a white man did has chalking it up to a bad fucking day tells you everything you need to know. This was not just some slapdash press conference. The guy had to think about what the fuck he said. And as Tony likes to say, and we got Tony in the background here, he fell back on his whiteness and said, oh, gee, you know, he had a really bad day, so he shot a few people, killed them dead, and he's walking around in his drawers and all this bullshit. That's bull. That's straight up unadulterated bullshit. But don't let that get in the way of the story, because
it's also you know, another one of the 100 profiles of white supremacy. Because, you know, hell hath no fury like a slightly inconvenienced white person. See, here's the thing. To me, with all of these shootings, whether it's Columbine or Orlando or what have you, it's all the same. You know, in a sense, you could make the scenario of, they all had a quote-unquote bad day. Well, look, we've all had bad days, but, you know, we didn't drive 100 miles with a gun to shoot people. You know, there's a difference. But see, again, when you've got folks that whose main thing is to justify the racism and keep up the whole thing of white supremacy, this is what have you. You know, the only thing that only thing that bothers me a lot is how there was a scenario where they actually started blaming, in the round way, sort of trying to blame black folks for this. It's like, you know, when we get killed, we get blamed. When somebody else dies, we get blamed. I mean, what the hell?
Hello. And let's not forget, the guy is on trial who can't speak for himself because he was choked to death. That's an anti-black fucking crime. No way a white guy gets choked to death for a fucking fake $20 bill. We know this. The brother who was out there jogging in Georgia who got bushwhacked, that's an anti-black crime. You know? Yeah. I mean, on the press saying, you know, there's been a rash of anti-black crimes lately. No.
Well, Michael, let's keep calm here. Because, you know, we have to decide if this was a hate crime or not. Now.
Mm-hmm.
Because
he's Arab. He's Arab American. Bite their tongue.
So see, let's go back a week to Atlanta, a week or two back to Atlanta. Remember, one, he had a bad day. And we and 2 weeks later, we still haven't decided, because only six of the people he shot were Asian. So we can't we can't say irrefutably that this was a hate crime. Okay. Then probably the out is only three quarters of the people he killed were Asian women. The other two were white. And, you know, this is, I mean, I heard somebody mention Biden. Biden is Hillary Clinton in a suit. He's gonna play Hall, and you know, at the end of the day, he would have stood up there, talked for 15 minutes, and at the end of his 15 minutes, the only thing you're gonna remember is bye.
Yeah,
because all the rest of it is the bull crap. And as I was gonna say before, look, you know. This young man who did this shooting managed to get 100-some miles away.
Wow.
And some officer stumbled upon him. So that tells me he sounded like he had a plan of an exit plan, as they say in the military. You know, you got to fight your way in, fight your way out if necessary, but you also have a way in and a way out before you commit to a situation.
I've been saying because there are groups of people who have created this Manchurian candidate, for lack of a better expression of it, for that specific purpose. If he had gotten away, he or others like him would have committed more shit in churches or anywhere else in acts of domestic terror, and nobody would have said boo, because they would have still tried to catch whoever it was that they thought did it in the first place. Now, this is something that's been ongoing, and it's not going to stop. I don't want to spend the whole show on this. I want to put this to bed for now, because the most important part of all of this is that they're telling black people, you can't have a bad day. They're telling anybody other than white people, you can't have a bad day, because when you do, you don't give them a shit anyway.
Pretty much. But the sad thing is that there's, you know, in another few weeks or months there'll be another shooting. I'm at the point where they, you know, see the only time you'll see some action is just, let's be honest, if there's a bunch of literally white Americans that get killed. If it's a group of minorities, you know, they'll do whatever till another news cycle hits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, you know, most of the ones in Colorado were white, and you know, the bigger thing they're talking about now is not those poor workers in there. They're talking about the officer who had seven children.
It always comes back, you know. And look, I'm not trying to disrespectfully, but isn't it interesting how they will always play the police angle or
the police man.
And it's like, what about what, you know? So the only people that count. So what is it? Blue lives matter, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We know there's more to come, but before we carry on with this, I need to switch gears up. And I know, Tony, when you were doing the articles last year about people who are departed, you know, it was depressing hearing everybody that gone, because, shit, they literally were peers. And now we find out that one of the best players ever, one of the most complete players ever to play in the National Basketball Association, is no longer here. Elgin Gay Baylor died of natural causes. He was 86 years old. As a player, as an executive, he was a nonpareil performer. Remember, before Dr. J, before the Hawk Hawking, MJ, others, Elgin Baylor was an elegant player, meaning that he not only could play offense, he could play both ways. He was a great passer. He was a fantastic scorer and put up the kind of numbers within the framework of the game. Now, we know there are guys who can put up 30 points a game, but if they take 50 shots to do it, is that really a scorer? No. Baylor was averaging over 25 points and over 20 rebounds a game. He did it inside. He did it outside. And remember, in one game,
no
he scored 3-point
shot. Yeah,
No three-point shot.
You know, he had
shot.
The, you know. Yeah.
Legit.
And see that we keep hearing this beaten to death goat conversation, but
exactly.
Baylor has to be in that conversation as well because he was way ahead of his time, and again he did this all during his career as a college player for let's face it, no one's heard of the University of Seattle since he left. But he played for both Minneapolis and LA, was part of a great big three. It's mm-hmm. a shame that his body betrayed him before he could get, because technically he was a member of the 71-72 Lakers, the team that won 32 in a row. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, he only played like four handful of games that year, 14-15, had to retire. But technically he was on that squad. But in his better years, statistically, they struggled because they always would lose to the Lakers. But that being said, it's more to him than that. And see, he's sort of transcended in the sense of there's a generation of us, probably the majority of us here on the thing, would know him as the great player. And then
yep.
there's another generation that knows of him as that sad-looking man that would show up at the NBA lottery every year as GM of the Clippers. And
yep.
and even then, he had to deal with, he had to put against, filed a discrimination lawsuit against Donald Sterling while he,
yep.
During his tenure. But it's sort of sobering because, see, again, we're losing all of our great ones. And Elgin Baylor was definitely a crown jewel in the NBA. Literally, he was part of that golden era of
yes,
the NBA.
I remember getting his basketball card, and it was like, holy shit, because you normally didn't get the stars. Like you got Richie Guerin and five copies of somebody else. But,
you get five Lindsay McIntoshes. No disrespect to Mr. McIntosh, but still.
We have to also remember Elgin Baylor. You can make the argument he was the first hardship kid ever taken in the NBA because Minneapolis used their number one pick in the 1958 draft to select him. They convinced him to skip his senior year. Get this. They asked him to skip his senior year at Seattle University and join the pros. So they didn't play well that year, but the fact that they knew what they had in Baylor, they didn't went out and grabbed his ass. They wouldn't let nobody get close to him.
Yeah, he's great ball player. It's unfortunate that in this era, it takes someone passing away before their greatness is spoke, because, you know, it was funny, and not funny, but in reading the, you know, the different obituaries, you know, you had to sort of take it back, because, again, you know, he averaged a double-double his throughout his career. You know, 10 All-Star, like 10 All-Star games, 11 first-team All-NBA. Now, I know there may be some people that may sort of scoff at that, but that's still, but see, I think the All-NBA selection makes, because, you know, that's sort of being judged by your peers to a certain extent, because and the thing about it is, you know, he was consistent, and again, even in his later years when his body was starting to betray him on the court, he was still a force. It took the bad knees for him to finally retire. But yeah, he's it's you know. I talked about 2021 of how every time, you know, a sports bulletin would come up, I would almost like dread it, because I would always think, well, somebody was going to pass away, and it happened again like that a couple of days ago with Elgin, because I'm working my other job, and the bulletin thing comes up, it's like, as soon as I saw like the name, I was like, oh no. So yeah, rest in peace, definitely, Mr. Baylor.
We always talk about, you always talk about how the old heads did things a certain way. And we saw Dr. J, we saw Connie Hawkins, we saw eventually Michael and others. But Baylor was just one of those, he would be in the flow of a game. I never saw, for the little time I had seen Laker games growing up, how effective Baylor was until you looked at his stat sheet. Again, he wasn't the kind of guy who was taking 50 shots. Because remember, Wilt was going to get his. Jerry West was going to get his.
Mm-hmm.
Gale Goodrich, who was as close to a chucker that you could ever find, number 25, he definitely was going to take his. It wasn't even about giving any. So we have to figure that maybe on a good day, Elgin had 20 to 25 shots max, 10 to 15 minimum. And with that, he was able to average almost 30 points a game and grab 20 rebounds a game. See, now here's something where your analytics, emphasis on anal, would have, might have had some merit if they would disseminate something like that. Because we got to figure Baylor had to shoot for a higher percentage simply because he didn't get enough shots.
Well, Mike, the thing you got to think about back then, You couldn't have guys shoot as percentages they shoot now. You couldn't stay in the NBA back then. Remember,
mm-hmm.
you had 8-12 teams prior to the NBA. You only had 8 mm-hmm. or 12 teams. At one time, it was 8 teams. The team went up to 12. At any rate, you shoot him much under 50% like some of these clowns do now. And I'm going to say this because I've been looking through stats from HBCU, but it's basically the same across the board.
Yeah.
Over the last 20 years, these suckers can't shoot. None of them. D2, D3, don't matter. Power five, mm-hmm. these jokers can't shoot. And the truth be known, the women outshoot the men, but we ain't even going to go there.
It's funny you say that, Fred, because I'm actually watching Texas UCLA now, and I've been basically since the women's tournament started, I've basically been just watching just the women's tournament. I watched the men the first 2-3 days just because they were only one drawn. But it's funny how much scorn the women's game gets, whether it's college or pro. But the same ones that lament about the terrible shooting in college and the pro on the men's side, literally mm-hmm. and figuratively, you know, go apes, don't, you know, just harass the women's game. And
exactly.
I mean even John Wooden, of all people, has said, you know, if you want to watch the best, you know, if you want to watch best played games, it's the women's side. It's all, now you may not, not now you may not get the above the rim stuff, but
mm-hmm.
still, I mean, again, I guess it's a personal taste.
T-Mac, what you got to look at with, you know, everybody talks so much about the above the rim. Okay, if you got a guy, let's pick a guy. Will, Patrick, Bill Russell. Think about it. When they extend their arms to the fullest, they can grab the rim. So yeah. Duncan, what? I mean, we're not even going to get on the, excuse me, there were 7 foot white boys like Bullwinkle and all them other cats back in the day. Mm-hmm. And even now, when a guy dunks, what has he really done? You know, Spud Webb and a few others, yeah. But
yeah,
most of them, you extend your arm, you're 6'5", 6'6", and you know those shorter guys have been mostly gotten rid of out of the NBA. They play overseas. But my point is simply this. All this emphasis on the dunk is really irrelevant because it has nothing to do with the price of tea in China. I remember sitting with Coach Mack one night, and this guy made he did a windmill dunk and all this kind of stuff, bang. And Coach Mack kind of shook his head. He said, "What's up?" He said, "That boy gonna cost him the game." So he comes down a few more times, breakaway, perfect pass, in stride, went up, hit the front of the rim, and triggered one of the best 4-on-1, breakaway fast break you ever seen in your life. The other way.
Did he get the assist?
He hit 4-on-1.
Okay.
You know. Fundamentally, what should he have done? Just laid it in.
Uh-huh.
Just dump it in. And we've seen these guys in games. You know,
yep.
It's not that they can't jump, but they lack full coordination. So as you go up and try to do your thing is one thing, but then you go up and do all this additional stuff, which takes your body out of alignment, you think. So you end up hitting the back of the rim, hitting the front of the rim. You know, just like some of them guys who don't step in, they step back and look. And please, somebody who knows more about basketball than me, what the hell is a Euro step?
It's a nice way of saying traveling, because you literally got to go around the fucking world to get
That's
to
right.
the basket, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. And they go through customs. And if I can,
yeah.
guys, let me deviate for a hot second and remind everybody. This is Elgin Baylor's career stat line. He played 846 games. And this is according to Basketball Reference. Averaged 27.4 games points a game, 13.5 rebounds, 4.3 assists. He shot 43% from the field, 78% from the line, and 10-time All-NBA. 11-time All-Star, Rookie of the Year when he came in 1958-59. Obviously, he's in the Hall of Fame. But more than that, he gave the NBA relevance because people were looking to see who are these guys like this, because he was a tweener. He was 6'5". We can make the argument that the best players in the NBA were mid-sized guys. You had Earl. You have Frazier, who was 6'5", Lou Hudson from the Atlanta Hawks, who was 6'5", Oscar, obviously. These were all men. These
wasn't yeah. Was it Gus Williams
Johnson.
Gus Johnson. I'm sorry, 6'5", 6'6"?
Gus Johnson, Baltimore. That's right, powerful.
I mean, it's funny.
He was
6'4", all of those
maybe
guys. All of those guys we just talked about would be considered small in the league now, and see, it's what weird is bigger is not. I mean, I don't want to play into Wilt's thing of, you know, nobody likes Goliath, but you know, bigger doesn't necessarily constitute better. Because see,
right.
a lot of your, like, you know, let's face it, a guy like the Greek Freak, or say Akeem Olajuwon, or or Tim Duncan. Those guys would have been considered centers. And I, and to be quite honest with you, I look at, you know, they don't play centers, quote, on TV or radio, but they damn sure have the center quality, at least to the, in the traditional sense, because, you know, it's always funny to me how they always use the argument with Wilt. Well, Wilt was playing up against 6'5", 6'4", guys. Now, that's some, that's, you know, usually that comment comes from somebody who has absolutely no clue as to who the other centers in Wilt's era. Yeah. You had guys like Walt Bellamy. You had guy like Willis Reed. You had guys like Wes Unseld. You had guys like I'm trying to think of my man in Nate Thurman as well. And even some of the, you know, the Yogi Bear white men that were playing. Some of them were decent, not great. I mean, I'll give you guys like, you know, say, well, Dolph Shays. Like Dolph Shays, Jack Wyman, who was Mo Stokes' running buddy. But that's the thing. Yeah. That era, because, again, you know, I don't want to use the whole ESPN argument, but that whole thing of anything before, say, 1979 or so, whatever, you know, it was inferior. But, so, I'm sorry. I look at, I'll come back with what Fred said. A lot of these guys in the league that are shooting barely 40, barely 30% and are considered superstars, I mean, I don't want to call him out per se, but I don't know if a James Harden could hang in that back in the day.
Well, I don't know. Hand checking, being physical, I guess not. And, T, let's not forget, T, you know, sports didn't start until ESPN came in the 70s. Don't say nothing about Johnny Hawkins and Baby.
Of course.
But
basketball is probably, I don't know if you guys all will agree with me, I would say of the four majors, would it be safe to say that basketball has dramatically changed the most of the four major sports?
Yeah, I agree.
Gary makes a point because, look, wooden sticks as opposed to the aluminum, plus, let's face it, the rinks are a lot bigger.
Also, you have 6'7", 6'6", guys playing with your hands 30 years ago.
Okay, let me ask you this. Look at the economic money. Who's the big dog when it comes to advertising, TV, and revenue economically?
But see, Reggie, I'm talking more about on the field stuff here.
I understand what you're saying.
But see, I'm talking strictly on the court, on the field. I tend to think basketball. First of all, here's the thing: the 3 second lane and the paint are there because of Wilton Norman.
ABA.
Sure. But also, it's funny how the NBA, pissed on the ABA for years. But how many, these guys are shucking three-pointers during the national anthem, right as soon as the national anthem is over.
But my argument would be, look how we got oversaturated the first of the four with football. Not only with the high school, hell, they got damn high school stadiums that look bigger than some colleges. And that's talking about with the avenue. And every time you see in football between the different leagues they have, what do? They steal a little bit from here, the World Football League, they steal a bit from there, and then they even get the color scheme. So in my opinion, just my opinion, football has evolved quicker than any other sports because they make sure they want to get those eyeballs on the TV set. Just my opinion.
Yeah, but oversaturation doesn't necessarily mean better, though.
No.
As long as they get the eyeballs, that's all they care about. They don't care about being better. As long as they can suck them in. And then with the betting facility, oh, my God.
But that's my point. But see, that's my point, Rich. Because see, my argument here is what game on the of the four majors on the field, sport has made has changed dramatically over the years on the field. Now,
even from the quarterback.
I agree because if we look at this from Baylor's time, late 50s, and how the game progressed from there. They really didn't have a basic marketing strategy because they had a couple of specific superstars. They had Chamberlain. You know, Boston itself created a star vein because they had all these individuals, especially Bill Russell, who helped in Boston. But in the constant marketing, of the sport, you know, players knew who Elgin was. It took TV to catch up. And tape delay comes in. All of a sudden now, the league can show off stars in other cities besides the so-called main ones. So now everybody gets to see this. And as this is going along, more word spreads out about basketball, how good it is and whatnot. And, yeah, it had its little stagnant point. But I think in terms of overall jump and constant moving up, basketball definitely has done that. But they couldn't do it without the talent.
And all due respect, when they had the drug problem, that's what hurt basketball.
Shooting, that's amazing. He's got a center in 6'5".
But in all due respect, Mike, that when it came to corporate dollars and everything, I would still surmise that football had done more because even with the social aspect, even with just the overall money, they had to go ahead and get the climate. And when they start seeing black quarterbacks in charge, even a few black managers, even a few black head coaches on the sideline, socially, that the ripple effect to society.
I don't think
so
you're wrong. I think what happened in the NFL, from a group mentality decided they needed to have fans on their sides because the players were the team, the players were the game, and they had to augment that. It was individuals like Michael LeBron, the cash cow, and all that shit that allowed for basketball to move forward. He was the one who was the one-man marketing squad. Everybody stepped to his tune, and everybody made money because he made everybody money.
What's interesting also now, in this age of media and whatever, which was the first league to have its own network?
Bingo.
It was the NBA. And again, look, I am not trying to be David Stern or Adam Silver's mouthpiece here, but what I'm just saying is they took advantage of the media in the sense of, they became a global game even before, put this way, the fact that the game became global sort of begat the dream team, good, bad, or indifferent. I always look at the NBA and their fans. It reminds me of the old jazz musicians back in the day. They had to go overseas to get their love. They didn't get it from there from here at home, so to speak. The top players in the NBA now get more love and get more respect overseas than they do here because they still look at a lot of it stems to the whole thing of they still look at black athletes as subservient. And that's why I've always felt like that's why they get the most scrutiny especially both in the NBA and the NFL, because there are majority black. Baseball is still baseball will play the segregation on and off. And hockey, while there are more black folks in the game, they still fall back on their whiteness as it is. I mean, you got the Sabres saying they want, if they trade Jack Eichel, but they're talking about they want to get 2-3 first round draft picks. Even Wayne fucking Gretzky didn't get traded for a first round draft pick.
Yeah, you don't know. Yeah.
And Mike, not to be Lloyd Bennington or whatever his name was, I've seen Wayne Gretzky. I've watched Wayne Gretzky play. And Jack Eichel, you ain't no fucking Wayne Gretzky.
Boy, you got that right.
Swift boat.
That's
right. You're on the swift boat.
Well,
hey, where's the historian? Hey, Professor there?
Gentlemen.
We don't have North Carolina. We got hockey and basketball, but they're semi-pro, not pro, so keep it moving.
Semi-pro, I hear that. Well, all right, as the professor says, we will keep this moving, because now there's a big question that has come up, and we need to know the answer to it. And Tony and I were speculating on this on Monday. Okay. And Fred, you're going to love this because, well, you won't have to tackle Dion. You know, I know you'd like to.
Don't get him started. Don't get him started.
I don't worry about Dion tackling me.
I told you, man. Why'd you throw him a softball, Mike?
Okay.
Why?
Well, let's look at it this way. Their first game. Of course, but they lose it. Now, we need to know, because I saw some other chat boards and other things like that. You know, the SWAC is appreciating this extra love and the extra exposure they're getting. But who
should they rerun the games about 10 times a week?
but again, it begs the question, who stepped to whom? And Tony, since you brought this up, you need the lead on this one.
Well, and see, this is something, you know, to me, when the story first broke that that Prime was going to be the head coach for Jackson State, and I remember relating this to Reggie and a bunch of other folks, to who first? To me, I got to know who, because see, then to me it will give us a gauge as to where this relationship may or may not be going. Now, let's play both sides in a sense. Now, there's a faction of folks that thinks that Dion, who got spurned by his alma mater and other schools, that he's going there literally just to sort of get his coaching bones, so to speak, and then when the first, for lack of a better word, white job comes through, you know, he's on the first subway train out of there.
Yeah, on that midnight train in Georgia.
If you look at it historically, we've seen this happen a bunch of times, and not necessarily going to other white schools, but maybe going to a bigger, more money black schools. But also, you've got Jackson State, great history, one of the, you know, clearly one of the blue bloods in HBCU football, if not all of football. And let's face it, they have had their ups and downs over the years. This was a school that basically threw Rich Comegys to the Gills because he didn't get along with management. And haven't we seen that way too often in HBCU football as well?
Rick Comegys, Dallas wears
shorts and used to play in the NBA and DePaul. But you got to remember, Rick Comegys is one of those guys that's won everywhere. He's won. He won at Central. He won at Tuskegee, and he actually won at Jackson. But he didn't get along with the
yeah,
management.
And
see, you know, there to me there is a viable thing out there where they may have said, we need to bring in Dion, if nothing else, just to, you know, put our brand sort of back there. But see, the reason why I say all that, because see, to me, I really need to know who approached who, because to me,
right,
it's the, everything is to how this is going to play out. Now, like I said, Pollyanna or whatever, I still think big picture wise, Dion in at Jackson is a good thing for HBCU football. I truly do. It's not like the SWAC coaches needed more incentive to want to go out and beat Jackson State. They were, you know, they're trying to beat up each other any damn way. But it sort of gives all the other seven coaches, I guess, incentive. They may not put his way. Fobb and Odom may not get along with each other. But the one common thing is you want to be on that. You know,
well, no, that's the Ali factor. You want to come see him to see if he gets his ass whooped or see if he wins. And Mike,
that's why they play the video. It must be the money after the game when he got his ass kicked.
Oh yeah, even though they did.
I said, why would they be seeing you, Dion?
It's a left-handed compliment that he's bringing all this attention to HBCUs. And Fred, I know if you was on the sideline coaching, what kind of little surprises you'd have for Dion's ass if they would be in the field of battle.
Oh,
run all of them. That's the one thing they didn't stop is the run. I mean, let's pull this back down to earth. Okay, now if you have ESPN, as far as I know, it don't really matter if you got ESPN, ESPN 14, 15, 16, or 17. It's just ESPN if you got cable or whatever, as I understand it. Same thing with the ESPN app. It don't matter which one you got. 1, 2, and 3 is all the same to me. Well, I don't know what he's talking about half the time. And the other half, he don't know what he's talking about. Because, I mean, come on.
I'm not laughing. He's telling the truth.
He is telling the truth.
To a degree, I understand this whole thing about him bringing the cameras and stuff, because here's what I kind of stuff I watch. Remember, I don't watch games as a fan. I watch as a statistician, which is good. I'm seeing him walking up and down, but you know, whilst the game is going on, you all do know that there's a separate film crew that's documenting everything he says and everything he does.
Right. Jesus Christ.
Just watch him. When he moves, they move. There's a young lady that stands close to him, one of the managers, and then right behind her, usually is that this little white guy who looked like he may have played linebacker a little bit somewhere. But this white guy go a little to the side. You see the little bone thing they use because they don't use the big pole thing on a pole like they used to. But you know, there's a whole scenario and a whole movie going on around that's being done in the background. And my question is, I watched Dr. Cavill, and I watched some of the other stuff, and I also went back and watched the game where they played Alabama State last weekend. And, you know, Alabama State did what everybody else should have been doing. But think about it now. Everybody was talking about, well, you know, he's 3-0. Yeah, but the guy fumbled going into the end zone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He fumbled, and the opposing guy fumbled. They just don't pull the guy fumble last.
Yeah.
But at
that's
rate,
true. They got a couple of lucky breaks. That's true. But can't we all agree that this is good for HBCU ball, seeing this kind of exposure?
Well, yeah, I mean,
think
of this way. Okay, what you know, it's good exposure, but what other football is being played? Now, here in North Carolina, I know we're playing high school ball now.
Unbelievable.
This thing about going from ESPN3 to ESPN2 and all that's, I mean, that's really not that significant because, hey, if you get ESPN, you get ESPN. If you don't, you can also go to YouTube, which I do.
Yep.
Because but you know, the thing is, who else is playing now?
Yeah,
you know,
you're right.
Because when the white boys show up in about what, four or five months, when they show up, and like I said, this whole complaint about ESPN, which ESPN you own, it don't matter. It's just a talking point.
You know what I'm saying? I 1,000% disagree with you. I'm gonna tell you why. Because what's wrong with the extra exposure? I mean, let me finish. My thing is, and look, it's not like that they're starving for attention, but, you know, look, any extra that you get is fine. And, yeah, we know once the quote-unquote white schools come back, they'll go their elsewhere. But you know what? While they're here, let them take advantage of it. And I'm not talking about Jackson State. I'm talking about Southern. I'm talking about Alabama State. I'm talking about all of those schools. Now it's unfortunate that the MEAC thing blew up because I think that would have added even more to it.
Yeah,
but
I was getting ready to go there.
It's you know, again, to me, big picture wise, it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. I really do because that kid who Jackson State is still trying to tackle 3 days later, people are going to remember him and his stock will go up and there'll be and there may be somebody that says, hey, I may want to go to state just to play down it, because see, to me, again, look, they always
that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying, don't make it more than it is, because, your prime's mouth helped push it from 2 to 3, from 3 to 2 or whatever. That's okay too. But, you know, there is no competition. You know, right now it's good exposure because there's no other competition. Mm-hmm. Because, the real deal here is where, as I understand it, whereas the baseball used to be on ESPN 14, 15, now they're on 3 because everything's split up. But see, when it comes to, because think about it now, last weekend you had Texas Southern, who are the other schools? Anyway, Jackson State women, and
no kind of A&T girls.
A&T girls.
The tournament.
NCAA. And two of the Norfolk State actually won, so they played two. You know, they got to play two games.
In Texas.
So the revenue was there, and the exposure was there. But you know, you have to be careful how you apportion that, because what did you see? You saw only what, one really competitive game out of the four. But when you see the SWAC, you saw Neon beat Grambling. Well, Grambling is right now a team in disarray, but it's still Grambling.
Exactly.
Alabama State is still Alabama State. Southern gonna still be Southern. And
Fred, let's be real.
if there are some people that are in a sense being introduced to this, to HBCU football now, isn't that gonna help them, especially when the quote unquote real season comes?
Tony.
But see, the kind of stuff you got to be looking for here is how, and I think to their credit, the current leadership of the SWAT itself has as much to do with the progress that's being made here as anything, because they have taken a totally different. They have gone into the sports and entertainment business. I'll put it that way, because they don't look at it as, well, we hope somebody watch. You know, they're telling us this is the best product out there. This is what you should be watching. And see, if you follow them, they have taken it from not just a sports perspective. I mean, you know, they tell you real quick, you know, most of the best black law schools are in the SWAC.
Yeah.
Most of the best business schools.
Better than Central?
Better than Central? Most of the best.
Absolutely.
You know, and all these other things. And this is kind of stuff they have been doing. And their promotion is, one, you can get to the league. Two, you can leave with your degree. But see,
we agree on that, because see, the thing is, having that 30-second or 60-second commercial, in a sense, infomercial, with the individual schools, and then you parlay that into the conference doing that. Because see, again, this is why it is important. That some people do get to see them.
You know, we hate the analytics people, but let's be real. By the time we get to September, I want to see the recruitment numbers for all the HBCUs. Guaranteed, they will have gone up, and the quality of athletes would have gotten better. So I think there will be a trickle down effect from a jockstrap point of view. Let's say, for argument's sake, Jackson gets 8 recruits who could have been Division I recruits. Alcorn, natural rival, they get 4 or 5. 2 or 3 maybe get picked up by PVU. Further, Texas Southern get a couple that they maybe wouldn't have had a shot for, because they either want to whoop Deion's ass or they want to play with Deion. I see that as a possible boom.
So where did the white schools come in at? You know they're going to start. My thing is we got white schools coming in right now, cherry picking HBCUs already, from basketball to football, especially in football. And I hate to say this, guy, when Howard dropped the ball and didn't play basketball, how do you think that young man felt watching those other schools? And he was the number one recruit out there. You don't think he's getting second thoughts? I can tell you right now, you got CIAA where basketball players are leaving right now
because there's going to be, it's never going to be 100% perfect.
I agree.
But it's reality too.
But I
think the fact that he dared to go to Howard speaks a lot. Now, he hasn't left yet. And look, all of this is still happening under the worst conditions and the worst case scenario possible with the pandemic going on. To me, that's another reason why that this is a good thing, because there is nothing else to watch, but they're there. You know, take advantage of this situation right now.
I agree with that. They never
have another scenario like this. But see, and again, and
let's hope and pray we don't.
I
said let's hope and pray we don't have another scenario.
I hope not. It's a double-edged sword that they are getting extra eyeballs now, but it took a freaking pandemic for it to happen. But all that being said,
take advantage, you know, take advantage of that situation, because, see, again, I think that you will cultivate an audience. They are, and I know they already have an audience, but there's nothing wrong with more.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with a little more. And as one who has followed it, you know, I'm a strong proponent of expanding at all times, make bigger, better, and just, you know, bigger, faster, stronger, and all those kind of things. Because, see, if you follow, as most of us have followed HBCUs, we know that bigger, faster, stronger came from us anyway.
Exactly.
So being able to go out and show these folks what we, you know, what we're really about is always going to be a good thing. It's just that I think to some degree this whole thing, the whole idea has been co-opted. But you know, it can be done better.
I just think overall they need to do a better job of showing up that they can have the best of both worlds here. You know, we always talk that you graduate from an HBCU, you get something of value. Patrick Farrar's in the mix as well. But now, they can say, okay, look, you can get your degree, and you can also play in a value conference. They will be hyped, tuned up on you, because you will be under the microscope now, because the SWAC, and I'm talking about a league mission, not a team mission. The SWAC has to get on board with having everybody understand that, okay, they're going to take the lead and be the big dog in the HBCUs and go for it. And that means more exposure. Now, there may also mean some pitfalls to come with that, but you got to have strong leadership at the top to make sure that that doesn't happen. And that's the question I think they're going to all have to take into consideration as this thing continues, especially if Jackson State keeps winning games.
Well, it's one problem, Mike. It's called administrative costs. Remember that word, administrative costs.
Oh, yeah. Look. And see, and Reggie, that's never going away. You know, like Mike says, like roaches and in-laws, that's not going to go away anytime soon. But here's the thing. When they come back this fall, you got the two Florida schools and Alcorn.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing. They're already, you know, the bed's already being made. Right now, it's just a matter of, you know, in many ways, you know, you're getting sort of like, you know how the schools have their blue and white games or their gold, whatever, depending on what the school is. This is basically sort of a running game, but you're playing other schools besides yourself. And again, that's why it's so sad, you know. That's why it's so sad that the MEAC literally, this whole thing literally blew up in the MEAC's face, because they should, you know. Now, granted, there are a handful of schools that are playing, but, you know, because it's only a handful and not the entire conference, it's a shame. I hope everybody gets back on the field in the fall, especially probably more so the NCAA, because it's going to be almost 2 years. If they don't get back out there again this year, it's going to be almost 2 years. And we all know that they don't have the same sort of budget and scholarships and everything as even the quote-unquote Division I black schools. So it's imperative that they get back. What's kind of messed up is all the, you know, a bunch of the states who have a stake in this, like a Florida, like a Texas, they're, you know, for lack of a better word, they're fucking it up for everybody else because they're not following the damn guidelines, and it's going to push everybody back about 2 months.
Hey, Patrick, Ohio State Coach still got a job? I was just checking.
Yeah. First of all, good evening, everybody. How's everybody doing?
I'm sorry, Patrick. I know. I'm sorry.
I said all along, I have no problem with Chris Holmes as coach. My only issue with his is the fact that after 4 years, I'm looking at, and I said this back in November, Even in October, I was ahead in October when I looked at the team and ended in November and started talking about it in January, and I got some blowback from some Ohio State people. And now I ain't
not surprised.
and that's what it was. I said, how can all these thoroughbred 6'11", 7-foot people at Dayton, at Utah, at all these schools got 2-3 7-footers running, and we ain't got none.
Damn.
I didn't find that.
Yep,
very,
money can buy.
I'm going, what's I saw look at the kid at Loyola Chicago in the middle. I'm going, we can't get it. And you got a 6'7" forward playing center, and the poor brother was beat down and still put in 23 points and almost 10 rebounds. And folk complaining, that's my problem. But other than that,
yep,
they had a great season.
Hey, Patrick, you can get Tom Izzo to come coach your team and yell at the players.
please. But, you know,
Because Dave was tied ahead and said, sit your ass on the bench and don't get no fights.
Hey, here's the trick. He has a Nigerian 6'11", almost 7-foot brother on the bench. He can't play after 2 years, and you can't get another one? Oh, man. So it is what it is, you know. But I am happy for the schools that don't get the ULU exposure this time of year. I'm happy for them. But definitely I'm for the HBCU schools. I saw a Texas 7 playoff, but I knew when they got the Gonzaga after, like, mid first half, I'm going, it's going to be rough. But the school got exposure. And in particular, ESPN Plus has done a really interesting article, visual segment on North Carolina Central. You got to take a look at
the basketball coach.
That was a reality show. It's about 8 episodes now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, we're talking about the exposure of HBCUs, and particularly in basketball in this case, that series has legs to it. It has viewers to it. So we don't know what the outcome's going to be, but if they're doing something like that on ESPN Plus, somebody's interested more than just that article.
Chris McGuire's not even with ESPN anymore. I'm sorry.
That's right.
He's not.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, you couldn't have a better – let's put it this way. You could not have a better coach being in the middle of that because, you know, he gets it. And again, it's not just about who. It's about, you know, what these kids are going to do beyond that. And I think because he's one of them. You know, he went to school central.
Yeah.
He knows the history. He knows what these kids have gone through and are still going through. You know, and the thing about it is, you don't get the feeling, you know, I mean, I might be premature when I say this. He's been there about 6-7 years now, and you know, he hasn't you know, gone to the temptation of going quote someplace bigger, and that's great. I hope he's, you know, I'm not trying to take money out of the pocket or whatever, but I would love to see him. I'd love to see him stay at Central forever, but, you know, there will come a scenario maybe where he moves on or what have you. But I think his legacy gets carved more and more every day, and this show is just another part of that.
Something
to look at with him is he does get it, and he is one of them, but you would be amazed at some of the dollars he has turned down, because whereas most coaches, you know, dollars, you know, you get a kid in, you going to, you know, you promise him whatever, I'm gonna be with you forever in coaching business and all that other stuff. But, you know, you got a situation here where he has turned down nice dollars to stay where he is. And part of that is, When he recruits a kid, among the things, it's just like several old head coaches. They tell me, "I'm gonna stay here. Your boy gonna graduate." and you get the degree. Because, see, I'm trying to remember Chris's last name. He plays with Houston, I think it is now. But, you know, he's from Winston-Salem. And he has done... Chris Paul and Stephen A. are behind that. So that's where a lot of the stuff comes in there. But you know, but the kind of stuff that when you see him, you know, riding through his old neighborhood and all this other kind of stuff, and you know, he even did a demonstration in one of the episodes about how you deal with cops when they pull you over.
He's been through all of that. And for me, back to that, Brett, you know something? You hit it right on the head. That is recruiting tool that 90% of college coaches ain't going to give you. It has legs. And let me add one more thing to that, Fred, about North Carolina Central. One of my closest friends in college to this day, he's a college professor in art. I went to the homecoming of North Carolina Central. I almost went to heaven and died.
Man, the mask is shaking, huh?
Brother, I'm gonna tell you something. I got kicked around campus, and when I found, it's a nice campus too. I'm walking on campus, and I'm walking around going, I don't see no dudes around. Where the dudes at?
Patrick, the question is, did you have your paraphernalia on? That's the question.
I went to the gym. The gym was real nice. We come out the gym, and we walk in the gym, and all of a sudden, I see these like 6'7" fine. I said, "Look at these fine, look, Lord, have mercy!" And all of a sudden, these three dudes walk by.
Wait, hold up.
These three dudes walk by, and the guy in the middle is a white dude. I'm going, and the sisters go hug him as much as a white dude. The red go, "What's that about?" And so my man said, "Oh, Pat, he's a point guard on the basketball team."
Patrick, you didn't have your cap or paraphernalia on, bro. Nothing that say you the new.
No, but they really found out. I'm just saying, man.
You've been turning stuff down. Down in North Carolina Central, a pretty boy, the newt. Oh my God!
But, you know, I even try to get my nephew.
Reggie,
you do know that Patrick. You do know that Patrick's wife listens to this show, right?
Oh shit! I'm sorry.
That answers everything.
Tony, she sleeps right now.
There is a God.
Damn, there is a God. But, I'm leaning on this shield. Captain Vision, my late dad.
I tell you what. I even tried to get my nephew to go down there. And one was really considering going down. I said, "Man, what are you trying to go on? One of these schools around here? Go down there. What? And if I found out it's almost 11,000 students, 10-1 woman, and you went around some college over here. Oh, you crazy? Take your butt down there."
Last year, the boys were there. Matter of fact, both of them were on the team last year, football and basketball.
So it's an opportunity, man. Definitely.
Oh boy, the good old days. I got flashback, Patrick. I'm sorry.
You can't help it, bro.
I'm just trying to keep the both of y'all out of divorce court. That's what I'm saying.
Wait, Tony. What's your plan? Oh, I know your plan.
Oh, Lord.
Like, hey, go on, Mike.
Gentlemen, we've been talking about sports recently, and Patrick, I want you to get your two cents in on Brother Baylor passing. But, you know,
the
collegiate world has been waiting with bated breath for the opportunity to get in and make some money. And I don't mean them kids. I mean those pimp-ass motherfuckers in the gilded towers who are going to tell you with one side of their mouth that they're getting an education, and the other side is like, yeah, they're getting an education on how you fuck up their ass without Vaseline. That's what's going on here. And we cannot ignore the specter of gambling. The NCAA watched the NFL. They watched the NHL. They watched everybody because they knew they had to find a way to get in and get something down on paper. It had to generate action.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. I was talking with Mike earlier this afternoon. There are about 15 companies, and I'm still reading on it. I'm still following up. Mm-hmm. There are about 15 companies that have aligned themselves with the immense amount of sports companies that provide data, and that Swiss sports data is attached to gaming, and now being attached to major financial companies, entities like Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs is in on a big time. And the combination of the three, the data companies, the gambling institutions, and the financial institutions are beginning to start, they're already in bed. They ain't doing nothing yet, but they're already in bed. And the projection from this year for a state like New Jersey, which had over $1 billion in gambling just up to football season, by the time these entities put together, by 2033, they're projecting to make $14 billion in doing that time.
Wow.
$14 billion.
And that's just off of the 15, you said, companies now, because you got to know that there's going to be at least
three times more. There you go, Tony. And how it works, in my years in Wall Street, if they got 15, they're going to say, where's mine?
Oh, yeah.
When can I get in?
Yeah, that's the ultimate copycat scenario.
Yes. And I'm still reading on it, but and the interesting part for me is the data companies. This company called Sports Data and another one called SportsZar. Man, this is what you need to do. I told Mike earlier this evening, go tomorrow, look on YouTube, go to CBS Sunday Morning from last week, and watch the piece that they did on gambling with your friend in mind, everybody, Brett Musburger.
Oh, God.
Yep.
He's not hiding it anymore now, is he?
Oh, no.
No.
Go watch that piece, and if you don't understand that piece, the future is about sports is that piece.
Mm.
And it's entirely. It's about, of course, you know, CBS Sunday Morning does the best
Sunday morning,
in the week.
It was
a 9-minute piece, Tony. If you think these folks ain't serious, go watch that piece.
Well, that's, you know, it's not to pat myself on the back, but just the final frontier. That's when the Vegas Knights became official, and then all of a sudden, a year later, the Raiders decide to go down to Vegas as well. I mean, it's a trickle down. There's the ultimate trickle down. And see, now, I always turn the sound down on the big games anyway because they're not talking mess. But now even more so because you watch the games now. Now we saw it with the XFL where they literally had the over and under and the line on the game. I mean, even more so now. Oh, no.
Probability was laid out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And now
you have
and in many ways, Mike, you know, we always talk about how the Super Bowl has those prop bets. I mean, the NCAA tournament, tournament is the ultimate because,
that's where they have their money. Seriously. That's where they make their money because everybody's doing sheets. So how are you going to do a sheet and really have it mean something unless you luck up and get all the upsets and get that final four where you got at least 3 to 4? No, prop bets are what you need. And that's what the NCAA is taking advantage of. They are winning this thing. I mean, they're squeezing the dollar to the even green, y'all. They ain't holding back on this shit. And what Tony said about the XFL, it is so true. And it's not an accident that The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, and the CFL are considering merging their talents so that they have a viable league.
Yes, they are.
And they solve
the
border problem that the CFL has always wanted to take a shot at. So there's a whole lot of shit going on. If this works, there's going to be so much action all year that any gambler worth their salt is going to have fun betting or they'll be crying because they ain't going to have no draws left because they'll take every motherfucking dime.
That's right. Tony, Mike,
you're right. That happened last week.
They submitted last week. And your point's well taken about the gambling piece regarding when they put the following sheets up for the tournament, ESPN, had a number for everybody who signed in for the tournament. They ended up about almost 21 million people. That's the casual people. Imagine what else is out there.
They've already made the money with the advertising. So let's look at it in round numbers. Let's say everybody paid $1 for a sheet. That's $21 million sitting there just like that. They didn't do anything. Nobody took a shot.
Hey, Patrick, where's the money on the Holyfield and Tyson fight?
Oh, man, please. Oh, I would like to see that. At 25 million.
Wow, so you bite his other ear off?
I tell you what.
Mike's a vegan now. Mike's a vegan now, so he won't be biting his ear.
That's right.
He has matching earlobes.
Wait, that told me what I already knew. Mike got the money when he don't need it.
Yeah, pretty much. And apparently, his fight with Roy Jones Jr. actually
made some money, bro.
Yeah,
made some money, bro.
Very. Mike's not dumb. You know, let's say this out loud. Mike Tyson's never been dumb. He may not speak to a manner that some people would think would imply intelligence, but Mike got a lot of common sense, and Mike knows his craft. He's a student of the game, and the fact that he said everybody got a plan until somebody get knocked the fuck out, he's right.
hey, Mike, he got more sense than Sharon Osbourne, especially when they actually checked that. Watch it. That's the queen mouthpiece now. Watch it, baby.
Yeah, please.
There's a piece of video where Mike Tyson was being interviewed in Canada, and the guy was black. He was trying to be a wise guy, and he tried to casually bring up Mike and the rape situation that happened in the States.
I've seen that.
I would fuck you up, basically. And if you say one more thing, I will fuck you up. And the other guy, he went from brown to white real quick, and he's like, oh, okay, Mike. You know, he said, thank you, blah, 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 and he signed off. Mike was going to rip that boy's ass off. And I don't blame him. The guy was looking for trouble. He really was. He was trying to set Mike up.
What you always see. Which is a classic guy, one of the reasons why I have a problem with one of the local guys here, Michael Kay. Oh, please.
Unless
he's talking about baseball, I'll listen to him. They were talking about the MVP today, which I hate talking about MVPs. Don't, please, it's fabulous season.
MVP for what? For baseball?
For basketball.
For basketball?
Yeah.
The last guy. I wouldn't even ask him about baseball.
God, please. Well, you know better than I do. You talk about mediocre. He's the most overrated guy. Which, you know, he worked in the Daily News. Well, that's a classic guy who's in the old boys club, and he fits into
a team. Absolutely. Well, and the thing about it is he's literally like a pig in shit because he's on, you know, because they are the Yankees, so he's going to get, you know, there's going to be a national audience, you know, and you see that, did I see rightly today that they're going to put a handful of their games on Amazon Prime?
Yes. And that's the next piece that's coming. That's Amazon Prime, because you know Amazon Prime is going to have Thursday night to itself.
And you know what? They can have it.
Yeah.
You can always watch reruns of Eddie Murphy coming to America too.
They'll probably sprinkle a bit. Please wait. If it's like any of those Thursday night matchups last year, they should put Eddie on standby.
my point was, Michael Kay was talking about how great, you know, was Hap Harden, how he changed the team around. But you know something? The reason why he couldn't have a problem with being MVP, he left the team. Wait a minute. We're talking about how the guy's playing. Why do you got to go back to what he did in terms of how he left?
There you go.
Come on. Deal with the positive.
You bring up a great point. We were just talking about this regarding Elgin Baylor. Now, you know, NBA writers and NBA people who covered the league had to have a different approach in the 50s when they were talking about players or interviewing players like Elgin and Wilt, et cetera, et cetera. We didn't have that kind of pandering shit because basketball was trying to stay on the good foot and gain more popularity. So they had to come correct. And asking the questions they did, there was an understanding by the league that whatever you guys do has got to be for the good of basketball. We're trying to catch fucking football, and baseball is light years ahead of us. So look at the time from Elgin when he came in the league in 58 to now. This is where basketball has gone. They're the only sport that went from a losing posture and moved all the way up. Football had its little beginning in the 50s at the same time where they got the TV exposure and now people were able to watch football games. Baseball screwed the whole thing up, but basketball has gone straight forward in 50-plus years from where Elgin left till now. They've made more inroads in hiring, more black coaches, more black managers. When he was there, it was Elgin, Wayne Embry in Milwaukee, and Al Addles in Oakland. Only three, but there were three more than anybody in baseball and football had.
Yep. And the thing about it with Elgin, people killed him because, well, the team was never successful. Who on the team?
He was
up to the owner. He had guys on minimum wage playing basketball. It was
exactly
up to him.
Right.
And
he tried to pay Elgin minimum wage.
He's a fucking racist. He's a racist. Yeah. Elgin was hot.
And it was so, we talked about this earlier where, like, you know, folks of our generation, we know him as a great ball player, but there's a generation of folks that remembers him as that sad old man that would be sitting there at the NBA lottery every year. It was a shame, too, because he was a classy guy. For him to have to go through all of that mess, it's a shame. I mean, I'm glad that he can be remembered for something other than that. But it sucks.
Tony, talk about letting your work speak for itself. I read Elgin Baylor's stat line. Now, everybody knows what a great shooter Steph Curry is and other shit like that, but name me anybody in this league right now who shoots better than 43% from the field.
Mike, let me add to that, Mike.
Not just under the damn basket.
Mike, let me add to that, Mike. the shooting percentage, per, you know, the points per game, and the rebounds of the game from his position versus double figures.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
We get crazy
when somebody's averaging 14 rebounds a game, like it's a big deal. He averaged 14 and a half rebounds for his whole career.
Yep. And the thing about what I had to tell some young guys about recently about Elgin Baylor, I said at the time you watch guys that can run and jump and fly, which is good. Of course, everything progresses. Everything has an evolution, and I'm happy the guys have to do that today. But the game allows them to do that today.
And guys like Elgin who opened the door for that.
Thank you. His style of play, was the painting of a new type of ball being played in the NBA. But also, and the reason why it was so good as compared to today. Today you can play that way. Back when he played, if someone could fly, he'd be on the ground because somebody's going to knock him on the ground.
Yep,
they allow you to do that today.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because believe me, I've seen guys come flying down the middle. You think Gus Johnson was going to let him fly over him?
Exactly.
Do you think, wait, what did Will Chamberlain say? If you come to the office, you got to expect the price. You think Will Chamberlain would be like that?
Well,
don't get me started.
But see, it's not so much the look you expect it from the big name guy. But see, even the fair to Midland guys would be like, No.
No,
that's right.
You're not gonna posterize me. And see, today in today's environment, they think that playing that Matador defense is good basketball. Well. It ain't good. First of all, it ain't good basketball. And then the same one who plays Matador defense don't get the rebound, so there's no outlet, so there's no break. So, these guys playing today, most of them, as good as they are, most of these cats couldn't have played back then.
No, that's true. And it goes back to Elgin and the fact that he was a graceful 6'5". Yeah,
yes.
He was big,
yes.
But he was graceful. Most of the tweeners in that league were graceful. But you had guards like Oscar and Walt Frazier that would body your ass up because they were big. They were the same size as me in the small forwards. And even the small forwards were like Gus Johnson. Gus Johnson was big.
Gus Johnson was 6'6", and would beat you like he was 6'11".
Exactly.
And then on top of that, I'm gonna tell you a guy that I know would hurt people, and he's from this era, around here in Jersey, that people love. But I hate him. I like him because Tommy Heinsohn would knock you to the ground like you were a prize.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was.
Matter of fact, guys, see, here's my litmus test. I always talk about Jerry Rice. And I would have loved to have seen him going up against Atkinson and Tatum and Mr. Dr. Death. But see, here's the thing. Let me see James Harden do his backstep with Norman Van Leer.
Oh,
and
Lord.
Jerry Sloan.
God rest
you. It would be feed the hot man shit. You know that. There would be a price.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, you know what? And then that's another aspect that makes this so amazing because Elgin Baylor was dropping 30 or 40 points on people, and there wasn't a sense of vindictiveness like we're going to get his ass for this. Now, he may have gotten a rough foul for driving the lane, but, he did his thing. And he did his thing in such a manner that others watched it and they saw. Dr. J came in with that. Connie Hawkins came in with that. Jumpin' Joe Caldwell had it. He just played on a losing team in Atlanta. So there were a lot of players who had that, and the league allowed that type of game to flourish. But it didn't get the kind of position it should have gotten notice-wise, media-wise, because football and baseball were so far ahead of the game.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah. You got to remember.
Very true.
You got to remember. In some cities, the college, the number one college team would play in the first, and then afterwards.
Then,
by the way, there's an NBA game afterwards. Nah, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah. Tony, I want you one. Tony, I want you one.
You sound like you about North Carolina.
And remember, Carolina, and Carolina didn't have didn't have a pro team, so yeah, there was was the pro team, the Tar Heels, the Demon Deacons, and the Wolfpack, they were the pro team, and the thing about it is, it's not changed, has it, Michael?
that's the situation we have now, because the other day they announced that the Ball was going to be out possibly out for four.
Yeah, he broke his rib.
And there are people here in North Carolina that who they thought basketball
the twelve Hornet fans, not counting the Jordan family, were a little pissed.
I do believe they're going to push that boy to make that team better. Jordan's going to work that boy.
If Michael would stop getting every 6'7", 6'8" guy in known to mankind, I think they'd be okay. Michael does realize that you can't have a center. You can't have a guy over 6'9" on your team. It's not a league mandate that you.
Yeah. Now you know what? You guys bring up a great point. This is fair game. Has anybody in that area, Fred? Has anybody really criticized Michael's ability as a general manager procuring talent?
Oh, yes.
Because Carolina had a big game with one dick.
Yes.
Probably
gets
it more nationally than it does locally,
Mike, the only basketball being played by a North Carolina team now is the NC State women's basketball team.
You heard that.
We don't pass the fall line, which is about 50, 60 miles from here. There's no network for the Hornets here. Not that Channel 5 is the home station for the Carolina Panthers. We don't have that for
flagship station.
Flagship. I'm not even sure there's a station that carries them on the radio.
Yeah.
I'm serious.
That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing.
I have to admit, Mike, when the 4 or 5 years that I was living down there, I could never find their WFNZ in Charlotte was their flagship station for radio. Literally, if you were more than 10 miles out of Charlotte, you couldn't get them. Not even for radio.
And see, to be in two states, from Charlotte, what's that? Seems like 5 miles from downtown. You're going to South Carolina.
Yeah.
And people, it's truly sad to see. I mean, I would love to see the brother succeed with his millionaireship and all that, But at the same time, though, you have a professional team that is unheard of halfway across the state.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Chapel Hill. We have no clue other than the fact he gave a bunch of money, and then one of the players from Carolina gave a bunch of money a couple of days ago because Roy Williams was giving them. But at the same time, though, his brand, as they say, is him. It's like it's like some Pentecostal churches. It's not about the team. It's not about the league. It's about him. Well, Michael was, 30-plus years? The problem is we can't name a single team, single guy on his team.
Fred, let me answer that. in a way that you're correct, obviously, because you're there, you're correct. But let me give you some indication of what they're doing to change that particular perspective nationwide, and has nothing to do with local television. Look at the money that the NFL and the rest of the sports entities are what we're putting in into streaming of sports.
Hello.
You don't need a flagship
right.
station.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We don't know where they stream. Okay. We don't know where they stream either.
It's going to be easy. It's going to be easy because if you have a phone, you can get the game. And
yeah.
one of the aspects of
right.
what the NFL, people say, well, NFL lost 8% money last year. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
from network. But they're going
that's
up
right.
35% in streaming and with the new contract. That's why they can go binge, because I don't need you on network. I got it on my phone.
Yeah.
I got
yeah.
it on my laptop. I got it on my
TV. And now with Amazon Prime.
Prime.
And ESPN Plus, because apparently they're going to say the scenario is they're going to have some, if they get a chance to get back to those European games, they're going to put those European
yeah.
games
yes,
on ESPN Plus. But also, the big caveat here is Monday Night Football gets to be flexed after Week 12.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
More money.
More money. Yeah.
Which I think is good, because after Week 12, you know who's out the playoffs and who's in. You know who's
that's
you
right.
know the important game.
Sometimes, you know, Week 6 and 7.
It's good business as well, because remember last year, most lay people did not know that after week 10, every player on an NFL roster gets their full salary. So
yes.
that's another deviation of this. Make no bones
mm-hmm.
about it. Everybody who has a phone on this thread can access NFL football. It's just a matter of methodology. So you can do that now. You couldn't do that
and Mike. Let me move on a little bit about what you guys are talking about, HBCU schools.
Mm-hmm. Please.
I'm only saying if, Fred, don't get upset when I say this, if,
mm-hmm.
if administrators, or I call them the educators, have any idea what they could do with streaming to promote schools, they would leap on it like a hungry man on a tuna fish sandwich.
Exactly. We call in the media, being wired.
You don't need to be wired. You don't need
mm-hmm.
that.
Especially
yeah.
now you don't. But
yep.
To show you where some of the mentality is coming from, a few years back, well, it's been over a decade now, Bob Lanier had a meeting with the CIAA presidents and chancellors. At the end of the day, they were more worried about how much money his white lawyers were making than what they were going to make off the deal.
Oh,
and the kind of stuff he was trying to do. And they walked right into this thing with Urban Sports. Urban Sports milked them like the cash cow that we've been talking about, because they never got. For those who don't know, Bob Lanier, he had a bad knee, but he was a good guy, good ball player.
Oh, LeBron James, a lion too.
I've been around him. Yes,
and he was a good businessman. And they basically, their whole perspective was wrong. But there again,
mm-hmm.
we're dealing with a situation here where at Federal State, their new chancellor doesn't have a doctorate for whatever reason. His mother-in-law was on the board.
That disqualifies him from getting the post-grad?
Yeah, basically. The thing is, if by chance he does take a good business approach, because it can be good, but he's not necessarily endearing himself to staff and workers and students either, which is going to hurt him long term, because we just went through that a few years ago at Winston-Salem State with a butthole who didn't know which way. Matter, he didn't even like athletics. But, you know,
he should have been fired.
He shouldn't have been fired, but that's another story. But the kind of thing that we're dealing with HBCUs, though, and right now the problem is with Alcorn, one of the reasons they didn't play was that it was a decision by people in high places, not at the state level, but it was at the campus level. You've been around black, all y'all been around black colleges. You know, there's that group out there. Well, you know, we're educators. We're not.
Don't get me.
My famous question: how many people gonna come watch your English major's diagram of sentence? You know.
If you want the band,
but if you don't have a football game, what you need with a band?
And Mike, look that up in your fucking Wagner.
You got that right. Yeah, you bet your band in there.
And to piggyback on what Fred's saying, at this point, they need. It's frustrating. You know, I know the model and the criteria that they use for having a person that's head of an educational institution. That's fine. We understand that. But if that person doesn't have vision, get his ass out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
This guy is ducking people more than he's doing anything else. And, you know, I'm getting, you know, there's some mixed signals. And this, because, like, right now, they just opened up everything here in North Carolina the last few days, so they got to go back to work pretty much full time. Although some people are telling you that you got to go back to work, some people are telling, okay, you come in, you know, instead of two days a week, come in three, middle of the week, that kind of stuff.
That's a new model.
Well, you know what, Fred, I'm going to go Jeopardy on you and say weird shit for 500, Alex. Here's something else we haven't thought about yet. Because Prime is doing what he's doing at Jackson State, it should raise the values of the assurance levels that the schools have to have for insurance policies for the players. You know, they're going to have to spend, or the insurance company will have to put up more as guarantee against injury, because now they've got more notice on it. It's going to increase the value of every team in the Southwest Conference. And
Mike,
eventually all the HBCUs.
Mike, let me help you out with that. I think that's a perfect scenario. My question is, where's Prudential? Where's Nationwide? You mean to tell me that as much money they make, they can't? Now, this has to come from the HBCU side now. What you just said has value. HBCU side, because they got business schools and Howard and all these other schools that I know can do some stuff. Let's merge and Howard, because if they're covering the ball players, and let's pick up the ball players, think a marketing person can expand that further and market directly to HBCU students and families and all that.
Because
the Big Ten schools do.
As a rule, do you all realize the only insurance company I've seen that has done much, quote, marketing at an HBCU lately was State Farm. Allstate dropped. The only time I remember in the last few years with Allstate was Fayetteville State had someone from Allstate that was part of their booster club, and he bought ads in their programs and stuff and gave them good money. But it was nothing like what they should have been getting. And then we had a young lady that was at a Winston grad doing the same thing at Winston. But, you know, as close as ENT, nothing. The same young lady bought ads.
Go ahead.
You would think that Jake character from State Farm, they would promote him or put him as somebody who graduated from an HBCU. I'm dead serious when I'm saying this shit. You know, it's all part of marketing.
Mike, it's simple. You don't take one of them State Farm's ads. I'm here at Tuskegee Institute, where I know good things happening. Boom.
Yeah.
That's where you start your marketing piece, right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not hard. Yeah, exactly. That's what's so goddamn frustrating, because it's simple stuff. It's simple stuff. It's literally not rocket science. But
you give T some water. He's on fire. Give T some water.
It's frustrating because it's right there. It's all right there. I mean, it literally is right there.
We've seen the dance before.
But you know what? Change the damn record then, if that's the case.
Tony, let me tell you something. Fred said something very important before. You know, I come from a family of preachers. How come you're one? Because I asked too many questions. That's not a story. where the money going? Who's accountable? No, anyway. But Fred said something very important. We're talking about when he said something regarding the institutions, they're more concerned about the institutions than about getting things done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
There lies the problem.
Yep. Administrative problem.
There lies the problem. Right.
What's your angle? I won't buy that.
What's the matter with you?
Here's the second part. That relates back to the churches. Because I know a lot about to my black churches, please. You know, and I came out of the Pentecostal church where you're more concerned with the individual than the mission. Well, we got administrators who are more concerned with the administrators' goals and what they want to do rather than the overall betterment for the institutions.
Yep. Well, you know what? It's one area they lack in, or they either lack in from not the desire to do it, or just from just willful arrogance, believing that it's beneath
that
them
too.
To do it.
What that too?
Mike, a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B.
This ain't
a Chinese menu. You got to make some motherfucking money, and if you don't have the willingness to do that, don't sit there and give me that Divine Nine bullshit, because you're the fucking problem. It's like the cartoon from back in the day.
Give Mike some water. Calm down, Mike. Calm down. Give them brothers some water. Hold up.
Speaking
of a person leaning on the ship, I had to say, whoa, Nelly there. Hold on.
He speaks truth.
I got to stand up.
Ain't wrong. I just want to see
the best happen for HBCUs everywhere, because they offer the best scenario. My niece, Tamika, went to it, and she's a Virginia Union graduate. And Charles Ford is a graduate.
Right,
I wish I had the opportunity to go. But the bottom line is, I did, but I respect what the HBCUs offer all of us. I just want them to do the best job they can in putting this shit forward.
Sometimes my niece is a graduate of Morgan.
It's like being in a great restaurant, but only locals know about it. I don't need to have the same crowd coming every time for the same meal. Let me be able to expand so everybody can come out here and get some of this good shit.
But Mike, I tell you, Professor, agree with me. The HBCUs have to love themselves and have to respect the history of themselves. When the CIAA gets underbidded and moralized when it comes to the basketball conference, it's ridiculous. I mean, for them to have all that crowd come to North Carolina, and then you got some shysters underneath the table cutting money, cutting in their pockets, not going back to school. That's the bullshit that happens, man.
Let's say, for argument's sake, Deion decided to coach Morgan State. Now, you already know the MEAC is in shit trouble. They barely can put out
would be a five teams. If he's in Morgan State and they're recruiting there, you don't think the MEAC is going to get a good look? You don't think more people are going to pay attention to what's going on down there in B-more? Of course. We may not like Deion for various reasons, but he has charisma and he has a spark. And the spark is what HBCUs need to get back on the stick. We already know we come from a pedigree quality. It's about making sure that we get back on the case and rebuild this. Because we're competing not just against those assholes from the Division I schools. We're playing against the NCAA that's trying to pimp our ass out and also put us in compliance situations almost in a, on a permanent basis, because now you're going to have individuals like, say, the young man who was down in Central Florida who was a kicker. He used to have his own website. And how dare that motherfucker make a penny? As Reggie would say, how dare you motherfuckers do this shit? It's awesome. Okay. And we win it now. This ain't J.G. Wentworth.
And again, you can use
Sign that boy up. We need that boy in the faculty.
And you use your history as one of the selling points.
There you go, Tony.
Tony,
the thing about you hit it on the head. What's the value of what you can sell? My goodness, if you can't sell your history, then close.
Exactly. And look, we got a guy here on this thread that lives and breathes that history. But people are more worried. And Fred, what are they more worried about?
Which day?
Yeah.
So we go to the chalkboard. We have Professor run a seal here and a seal there and run that shit straight up back and give it to them so that they know where they come from and that we get to tell our own story. Sorry for going off on a tangent.
This conversation has been going on forever. And the thing about it is, I'm tired of talking. I'm tired of talking. And look, I didn't even go to an HBCU. I went to Southern Connecticut State University. A boil on the ass of life.
I feel they need to do a commercial or something like that. I'm from my HBCU and I need cash now. You know that kind of thing.
And gentlemen,
really?
And Tony, related to the aspect of what you said about history, and how can we embrace this history to make it work to further the cause? If you got a vice president of the country from an HBCU, what else do you need? I've been working like a chicken bone, and there are markers out there. I tell you, there are markers out there that can do that.
That's right. Do the CB shit or whatever the fuck it is. Ring our ass up. Tell them we need this. Boom. Don't play around.
And let me add this to you. I'll add it very quickly, Mike. Considering what goes on in the country and how things happen, in my years in government, working directly with this, over the state of, directly with the governor of Ohio, Richardson List. You know, I've seen people come. Here's our problem. So here's the issue. I've seen people come to this country and do things. They ain't marching. They ain't hollering and screaming. But they get things done. And how come our folk can't take that approach to get things done?
You're messing with my thunder. Leave me alone.
Wait. Mike, I'm going to give for example. The horrible aspect of folk are trying
attacking Asian people this week. I mean, but that's been going for a while. But mm-hmm. do you know what this administrator said the other day? She's of Asian descent. She's Chinese. She says, we're going to take care of this. We have 23 million Asian people in this country. We're going to take care of this immediately. And the way the way she said it, I ain't singing no songs and marching. We're going to get people to get things done.
That's right.
Watch what happens.
We forgot about George Takei. Remember when Arizona was going to get stupid about the Super Bowl because mm-hmm. they were talking about gay people? George Takei got straight up and G-checked all those motherfuckers. He said, y'all going to fuck with us? We got money.
Mm-hmm.
I tell all my brothers and sisters to come up with this motherfucker.
And we begging you for none.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody about to see what's going on. And they only going to get a motherfucker down. Did they not hear him?
Mm-hmm.
He made
Thank
a point.
You very much.
Mm-hmm.
Mike,
the three, everybody thinks the three most dangerous words are must be the money.
Sorry, dude.
But the three most dangerous words are what do y'all want?
That's right.
Thank you.
And the Asians are gonna get their what y'all want moment very soon.
Oh yeah.
Because like you said, they're mobilizing. They understand the depth and breadth of the situation, and they can get this. Because you're getting from the background, because the city is payback is coming.
Mike, I hate to say this from a family of people who believe in faith, but it's true. If praying was the thing that keeps us together and takes us to the mountaintop, I say this. If praying was the only thing regarding our situation in this country, black folks own the country. There's something else more involved.
There you go.
There's nothing wrong with having it as a base. But you can't make
right.
it. You can't make it the entire thing. What was it that Gregory said? Oh God, I can hear him saying it now.
Faith without works is dead.
Yep.
That's
right. Yeah.
Yes.
You got to do something.
Yep.
Hope, wish. You got this work. Got to go. Got to be put in.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You got to do something. And my dad said.
Dick Gregory also said. Mama, the next time you hear the word nigga, they're talking about my book. And we understood perfectly what he meant by that.
Yes,
man, this is that. I'm an Afro growing up as we speak, and I got my pick in my head saying it's nation time. But no, seriously, it's HBCU nation
time.
This is the time.
This is the time.
That's right.
Yeah.
So let me get this out, and we go to final thoughts. It has been a spirited competition. And we appreciate everybody, as always, laying some good stuff out here for the Brain Buffet. Reginald, if you would give
yes, sir.
Give us something to work with.
You know, we're really... Sorry, it ain't me. I don't know
somebody.
Who TV it is.
What are you watching at 11:30 at night that's so compelling?
I can say it ain't mine. So I don't know who TV it is.
It ain't mine.
Nah, I'm downstairs in the kitchen. I don't know where it's coming from. Nah, but I'm serious.
Give us a final thought.
You know, the sad part about it when you had Eric Holder, who we talked about before, was Attorney General when the Civil
mm-hmm.
Rights and also Voting Rights Act was stripped. Now we see Ted Cruz, a man of color, doing his best impression
Don't
of Clarence
Thomas.
Reg, what color is he?
It's green. His color is green. But the sad part about it is that Joe Biden, President Biden, gets up and says, I think Republicans going to have an epiphany, and they're going to come around when he got people in his own Democrat Party wants to be Dixiecrat. This next couple of years, we're going to find out about democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take a third-year-old kid in class of civics to figure out that these Republicans have looked at the playbook, and they are going all out.
All I have to say is buckle up, ladies and gentlemen, because we in for a hell of a ride. Just my thoughts.
Let the church say out.
Hello?
We're here. Call him Mike.
We love Mike, man.
Earth to Mike.
Mike screaming.
Sorry about that. Real
no
reason.
Put that sandwich down, man. Put that sandwich down.
Patrick, go ahead, please.
As usual, guys, always makes a week talking with y'all. Considering some people I have to talk to who have no clue, and that's another story. It's next week is Tony's. You're like when I was a kid coming up. I look forward to baseball season. The first day, forget the first day of spring. It's first day of baseball season. Oh, over the years now, that's changed, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. I still like the game. I don't have the passion for the game but I love watching it. I've been taken away by which is why I don't cover baseball anymore. The immense emphasis on statistics and how batters average when it swings when it's cold outside 4 degrees. I don't give a damn. Can he play? That's what I'm concerned about. But I will say this. Today I started to look at teams and what's going on, and I'm particularly interested as I go through these rosters. Mm-hmm. How many black pitchers do they have?
How many black pitchers do they have? 42.
Well, I haven't gone through the teams yet. The Dodgers ain't got none.
There are almost as many black hockey players as there are baseball players.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's an interesting. I'm going through it now, so I'm interested to see it. Looking forward to the season. Hope my Dodgers win again. But I'm interested to see how it plays 82. Out.
82.
How this plays out.
Yeah.
How this plays out.
Time to put some wisdom on the table.
Now that y'all got me all riled up.
I'll
start with baseball because I'm a Pirate fan. So
we understand.
The season starts next week, and the 4th of July is right around the corner. So, you know, we get on that team in quick.
You'll give them that long, huh?
Also, we start wholesaling people at the All-Star game.
Yeah,
and so you know, between the 4th and All-Star game, hey, we got our roster will be intact. But after that, we started working on fire sale. So now you know, I enjoyed the discussion tonight. I mean, and one thing that hit home was you know you don't worry about the marching and all that kind of stuff. Well, I can't say I've never been a marcher because I've been out there, but now that they've gotten a little crazy with it, I don't go that way because me and my team couldn't march together because I would hurt somebody.
But
gentlemen, it has never been more clear that we have to tell our own story. The stuff we were talking about tonight. Mm-hmm. Hits the home run, the bases are loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And the more we tell our story, Deion is not the answer, nor is he the problem. He's just there. And because of that, I watched the game where he got beat last Sunday. It was a very simple thing. His boys were sort of acting like he act. He wasn't disciplined, they weren't either. And it came through loud and quick. See, remember, he was one fumble from he was a fumble going into the end zone from losing being 2-2 now. So, I wish him well, But, you know, I know he's not the answer to the problem. The problems that we have go much higher than that, and it's all about management from the top. So, but, you know, just keeping on track on telling our story, we have available now the HBCU history, football history, sports and sports encyclopedia. You can order it online at www.blackheritagereview.com. And you can get books. We also have books available on Claflin College, Claflin University, as well as Livingstone College. Livingstone's people, we will be talking sometime in the next couple of days, actually doing an article about the book for their alumni and some other things. They're finally waking up. And
make sure you pass that article off.
I will do that. Matter of fact, it just happened to be a young lady who is a Winston-Salem State graduate who works for Livingstone College who's doing this. So, like I told her, I understand she's a Ram.
That sounds good. BlackHeritageReview.com. Books, T-shirts, bric-a-bracker, firecracker, sis, boom, bah. Bugs Bunny, rah, rah, rah. No, you got all that good shit there, and you also got knowledge. On your fingertips, reading is fundamental. Big G, throw something in the pot.
Yes, sir. It's going on 38 years, 40 years. The Title IX. And we still are dealing with the inequality of women athletes compared to male athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, the NCAA started. They gave the women one bell bar and one day, one weightlifting crew all together.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a whole gym. When he got caught by three or four coaches, he got caught.
Yep.
It's an oversight. No, it's not oversight. You have had this right from the beginning.
You're right.
So once again, females have to fight for their right again.
Mm-hmm.
Females have to fight for the equality of playing this sport today again.
Yep.
I salute Miss Rapport as a soccer player.
Yep.
For doing what she's done.
Yes.
Because she kept her mouth shut. They beat those organizations. The U.S. women's soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
More money, get more views,
yeah.
Sell more tickets.
That's right. Uh-huh.
So
well, that's beyond what you want.
We need to clean this up. There we go. Sunday will be a special tribute to Denise E. Gray. We're going to do a Earth, Wind and Fire episode.
Watch out now.
And if we go to Senator Denise Gray.
There you go. All right. Nisi gets the fire, the earth, and all the other good stuff. The elements for Denise Gray and a memorial tribute to her Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern. We continue with our music tournament.
As her favorite group.
Right. Our tournament will continue tomorrow with Bobby Caldwell, but you won't do against Curtis Mayfield, Superfly.
And that's no contest, man.
I was committed to put him in the tournament. So Bobby Caldwell, Curtis Mayfield, and David Bowie and Roland Oldfable, who is the lead singer of Tears for Fears, in our tournament. That's coming up tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Tony, throw something in the pot, please.
Yeah, Mr. Caldwell, that's going to be a walkover, but we will have some nice. There'll be some nice door prizes.
And
you'll get the NBA.
The home version of the game.
Say Tony, over at halftime.
pretty much. Exactly. How to get fired, 101. It wasn't much, but I just wanted to get a fucking penalty against Nashville early. Those were the last will and testament of referee Tim Peel. Who allowed his mouth to write a check that his ass could not cover. if you're not familiar with the story, NHL referee Mr. Tim Peel got caught on a live mic in a game with Detroit and Nashville. Why someone would put a mic on the referee for a game like that, I don't know. But hey, I don't make those decisions. But thank God that they did. But again, what's so funny is how this story came out and how it's going to get buried. Because boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, and you too, Reggie, are you really going to try to tell me that this is the only professional referee that has tried to
Hell no.
I take offense to that, son.
It's out of love, Reg. It's out of love. But what's so funny is there's always the shock and outrage.
I was saying that from the professor, not you two.
If you make me feel any better, he egged me on. But it's always so funny to me that stories like this get always played off as, there's this shock and amazement that, how could he do that? How could he say such a thing? But see, again, it goes back to that constant thing. He's not upset at what he said. He's upset because it got caught.
Yeah.
Not anything else. That's right.
But see, what's so great about these white supremacist folks is that they give themselves away. Exactly. But you know what? But Mike, I know exactly why, the real reason why he got fired, though, Mike.
Why?
Come on, it's easy. He had a bad day.
Those white supremacists are going to keep singing songs forever. Sugar pie, honey bunch.
Help myself.
I want the world and everybody to know. Levi's in his grave somewhere saying, "These motherfuckers are messing up
motherfuckers this song." Well, you know what? There's an entity that helps to spark this communal levity here. And I speak as someone who is thankful, because without this, I never would have met Tony McClain over a hockey trivia question. I never would have met Fred over an interview on ESPN. Never would have met Reggie because of Tony being in the radio station. And Gary, I never would have met because of everything that was connected to one person. Now, I don't do that 6 degrees of separation thing, but I am here to say thank you to Roland Rogers, because he helped put this thing together.
Yes.
For better or worse, however he did it, and I include my sister Rhonda Harper, who is doing big things in the motherland and here, all of this great stuff wouldn't have happened if the opportunity hadn't presented itself. So, Roland, wherever you are,
We're trying to hold on. But you need to talk to your wife for real. Having said all of that, everybody, go stay safe and be safe. We will see you tomorrow night, 9 p.m., with the continuation of the Big Bag Tournament. To all my fam out there, please, y'all take care. COVID ain't out of here yet, so please go get your ass taken care of. Wash your hands. Wash your ass. Please wash your ass. But you know what I'm saying. wear a mask. Mask your casket, and please watch your back. Now, you know it wouldn't come on cue like it's supposed to. See, that's a Negro thing. There we go. Look at that, just stopped on me. He gave me Barry. I love it. Well, Barry's right too. We gotta practice what we
do. I'm ready, baby.
Yeah.
I'm gonna know you.
BlackAthlete.com.
Now we got the spirit that can never give in, with a heart that pumps stronger than 10 average men. It's something within, I was born to win. You can't hold me down, I'm a black champion. We had to fight for equal rights, on and off the court, and at the turn of the century, dominated sports for the love of the game. Endured the pain and fought through segregation, had to make a change. Jack Thompson, first black man to get a deal in the major league, knocking home runs out the field. Led the whole lead in RBIs and steals in his first year, MVP rookie of the year. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and Minnie Minosa paved the way for Reggie Jackson, Ken Griffey, and Sammy Sosa. Half of all MVPs in the history of baseball's been black athletes. That's why we excel in all our feats, cause we so deep, mentally, physically, and spiritually. So all I wanna do is thank my God, we worked so hard, came so far, black athletes, superstars.
Light through the eyes of a black athlete,